By the Senate Education Committee. I appreciate the use of the Senate Finance Room. And we have several senators in attendance besides myself, Senator Stevens. We also have Senator Fairclough, Senator Stedman, Senator Gardner, President Huggins, Senator Kelly, Senator French, Senator Dyson, and Senator Dunleavy. Anybody I've missed? This is an opportunity for all of us to meet with all the school board folks. Of course, we're pleased to meet with you in our offices at any time when you're here. But it also gives us an opportunity for all of us to be in the same room to talk about issues, to address what's been going on. So without having any necessarily opening remarks, except to say I've had a chance to meet with several folks. Met with this morning with the School Boards Association, and it was good to have a chance to talk with you about the issues that are foremost in your mind. So why don't we just go ahead and begin by any questions you may have, and we'll see if we can try to respond to them. We also have Senator Bishop with us, Click Bishop. Yes, please.
Do we have time for a few opening remarks?
We certainly do.
I'm Sue Hall, the president of AASB, representing 54 school districts, 8,302 teachers, and 129,000 students. And all these folks behind me have been involved with our fly-in, and I just wanted to make a few opening remarks. It'll only take me a few minutes, and then you can go to questions.
Please do.
If that's okay. You know, I thought about what I could talk about this afternoon, and there are lots of things. There are lots of education issues, as you guys know, but I decided to just pick one. And on Friday, when I got down here, I went to Harborview. I like to visit schools. And as I was walking through, I found this on a kindergarten classroom door. Graduating class of 2025. And you know, I worry about this. And you might ask, why do you worry about the graduating class of 2025? But I have here a proclamation by Governor Parnell declaring February School Board Recognition Month. But there's a sentence in here that I think is important. The governance of Alaska's 54 public school districts is vested by law in boards of locally elected citizens. And I'm one of those citizens. And that's why this is scary to me. You know, school boards are supposed to be looking down the road and around the corner. We don't know what 2025 will be like. And we set policy direction and budgets and curricula, and we're supposed to set legislative advocacy agendas as well. And I might just make a side note, when we circumvent that process, we can get into Chicago-style politics pretty quickly and lose the healthy checks and balances in the system. Because the duly elected school boards are really responsible for the outcomes that we're all concerned about. There are things that need to change, and for making sure that the graduating class of 2025 has what they need when it comes time for that. So, you know, I take that as a sacred public trust, and I know you folks do the same with your responsibilities. So when I think about it, you know, what will 2025 look like? Well, we know it'll be globally competitive, it will be hyper-connected, and it will be digital. And our schools need to be the same. So the one thing that I wanted to talk to you about today is the initiative that was included in the governor's budget, that digital initiative that will enable AASB to begin the process of digitizing the state for every student, one-to-one, device per student. You know, would you tolerate a school system that said we're going to pass out paper and pencils on Tuesday and Thursday for an hour? Or that said, you know, we're going to have one set of classroom textbooks that's shared by five or six classes? You know, we wouldn't put up with that. And yet the tools of our day are treated like that. You know, iPads and other kinds of devices that can open the world for kids. And why in the world are we allowing, teenage boys to drop out of our high schools to play their Xbox when we could be teaching them math and science and they could be actively engaged in that within our schools with similar kinds of approaches. And it kind of reminds me, now this will tell you how old I am, but I know some of the rest of you are this old. Do you remember the old Bob Dylan song that goes, "The times they are a change"? Can you do the words with me? So there's a part. Come on, you can do it. You can do it.
You're much better.
You can do it. Mike, you can do this with me. There's a part that goes, if the times to you are worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll what? Sink like a stone. You know this, right? For the times they are a changing. Well, it's kind of like that. But here's the cool thing. The really cool thing is that AASB has spent the last 6 years laying the foundation for giving our kids the tools of our age. And that's a pretty cool blessing for the state. They have the expertise, they have experience doing it in 19 or so school districts. They can do this and they can scale it up. You know, the courts have been pretty clear about the legislature's responsibility to deliver a viable, guaranteed curriculum in every part of the state. And you can do that with these devices. You can put master teachers and rigorous curriculum even without bandwidth, because of the apps that are available now. The HD House District 6 project that AASB did with for Representative Dick, 9 different schools, showed 2.5 times the expected learning gains for students at the end of that project. That's significant, you guys. And the one-to-one is just the means. And like any other tool, it could be used badly. But what AASB has proposed includes professional development, tons of professional development, the repair center, all the components. If you could see the little spoke diagram they have, there's lots of stuff around how to make this happen. But they know how to do it. And it is the means not only just to give kids, as a legislator said to me over the weekend, well, they just use them as toys, you know. And it really is the means for a lot of different things. We've all heard about Common Core. Well, this gives every student access to all those resources that are being developed for implementation of the Common Core. It gives them access to the more rigorous assessments that are coming down the pike because they're going to be delivered electronically. You heard Kara Heitz talked about the flipped classroom, you know, the Alaska Teacher of the Year. It's the flipped classroom, it's K-3 intervention, it's personalized learning, it's all those things that need to occur as far as reform in our schools, and they'll be in the hands of every kid. In recent days, there have been some folks come down and float some pretty big radical ideas. And I would tell you, you should investigate all of them. Some of them would inject significant resources into our system, and heaven knows we could use them. But none of them will transform our classrooms the way this will. And I think that's powerful. You know, make no mistake, my district, all of our districts need additional money. We have rising costs just like you do. We need a cost adjustment in our funding the same way you're going to put one probably in your operating budget. But no matter what you do with school funding, please don't miss this opportunity. It's really an opportunity to amplify student learning, to accelerate student performance, and it could slip away by the distractions of other big issues or things that we might want to talk about. So I just want to, I do need that, but I'm almost done. I just want to tell you, I'm going to keep worrying about the graduating class of 2025. But I'm hopeful that you guys will worry a little bit about them too. Because it's going to take both of us. They're counting on both of us. And okay, now you got to do the song with me again. For the times, they are. Yeah, you get it. Okay, that's all I have. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. So there's a reason the Senate does not sing happy birthday on the floor. It is so bad, you wouldn't believe it. So we have two additional senators who have arrived, Senator Ellis and Senator Walikowski. Thank you for being here. Anybody I've missed? Senator Bishop, yes, thank you all. Well, thank you, Sue. It's always good to hear from you. You know, you brought up the governor's State of the State speech and the fact that he touched on two main issues in education, one being the graduation rates and wanting to move from 70% graduation to 90% so that, and by 2020, a big job, a lot of movement. I know many of you are doing that already and trying to achieve that. The other issue was digital learning, and I'm glad you brought that up. We are of a generation, I think everyone around this table, who grew up without all the computers, computer games. And so for us to understand how it is that young children, people in school, have those skills that we simply never grew up with, and you're much closer to it than we are, I suppose. But teachers, that's key to knowing how to deal with. I'll tell you one story. My son, we were transferring our Netflix from Kodiak to Juno, and couldn't get it done. Called our son San Diego. He told us about a half an hour would do. Finally, we couldn't get it fixed to transfer it. And he said, go outside and find a 10-year-old. Any 10-year-old can fix it. And that's really true. Any 10-year-old can do it. And we simply are of a generation that doesn't allow us to, we're afraid we're going to break something. So, yes, Senator Stebbins.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. I think some of the members at the table here might have grown up when they didn't even have calculators. Much less computers.
I'm not going to touch that one. Senator Dyson has a committee meeting. Any comments you care to make, Senator Dyson? Apparently not. Okay. Well, glad he could be here with us. But that is true, I'm sure, about computers. Yes, sir. Please.
Bill McLeod, Superintendent from Dillingham. And if you don't mind, I'll have our board chairman, Bernina Benoit, hand out a little bit about our district, and Martin Gardner, our student representative.
Thank you.
And really what I'd like you to focus on here, because we hear a lot in education, unfortunately, over the last several years, that question, why should we put any more money in education? You have a failed educational system. You're not producing adults. The kids aren't doing well. Well, the first thing I'd like to say is a thank you to Click Bishop. You may remember me from James T. Hutchinson High School. We worked on the early days of getting that implemented in career technical ed, and Click was an invaluable resource for us in a lot of our thinking. And I want to thank you. You've been thanked many times for that.
Thank
but
you.
We haven't run into each other for a while. Now that I know where you're at, I'll come see you. And so, you know, when you say, what's happening out there in the school? Well, here's what's happening in Dillingham. And we've got the same challenges as everybody else, you know. But we're focused on sustaining our current school improvement initiative. That's what we're about. That's what we're trying to achieve. And I think when you look at some of our results, you'll see that we're doing it. And it's been difficult with the flat funding over the last few years, no increase to the BSA, one-time funding. Thank you so much. 2 years ago, last year, and if we have one time next year, thank you so much for that, because if we hadn't got that, we would not be getting what we're doing right here. We had to work hard to do that. But I want to highlight some things for you. And we put our benchmark on our third grade, because you've all heard how critical that third grade proficiency is to kids being successful all the way up towards graduation. And look at what we're doing here in little old Dillingham. Third grade reading proficiency increased from 55% in 2005 to 86% in 2012. Third grade writing proficiency increased from 54% in 2005 to 77%, and that should say 2012. Third grade math proficiency increased from 59% in 2005 to 82%, again, that should say 2012. Annual yearly progress in Safe Harbor, meaning we have moved 10% of our non-proficient kids for the last 3 years from being non-proficient to proficiency and not lost any. And historically out in Dillingham, the community has struggled with a high dropout rate. And we're breaking that trend. We have increased from 59% in 2005 to 65% in 2012. Good progress, not where we want to be. We want to be where the governor wants us to be. We want to be 90% graduation rate and above. And that's where we've set our star along with his, and we agree with that. We've also been able to decrease our dropout rate from 9% in 2005 to 7.5%. And our trend lines in fourth and fifth grade are reflecting this. We're in the third year of a five-year improvement plan. We've moved into the middle school this year. That'll be 2 years, and then on up to the high school, building what we call a bubble of success. So if you want that kind of success, this is my question. If you want that kind of success to continue in your public schools, what can you do to help us? Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Thanks so much. Yes, Senator. Oh, let me say we have been joined by Senator Michiki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. These are wonderful scores, and I commend you for pushing your students and having teachers that are engaged and connected. I have been to Dillingham on multiple occasions and understand some of the things that a rural community can face and why you're requesting additional resources. In Anchorage, we looked at our test scores and we checked them back in with the NAEP scores, and we found that at least in Anchorage, and I believe it was statewide, that there was quite a discrepancy between what our kids were testing on our own state proficiency scores versus how they will test in NAEP. Have your students taken the NAEP, and are they proficient in these? Are we moving along NAEP also?
Well, NAEP isn't something that's done at all grade levels, typically in the schools in Nevada or Alaska. But what we do is we've adopted a universal screener, the Northwest Education Association Measurement of Academic Progress, and it is tied to norms nationwide, as well as the Alaska standards. And so we assess our kids starting in kindergarten, first and second grade, because we don't test till the third grade for our SBAs. If we wait till the third grade, we're not going to get the improvements you want. So we started with our kindergarten, our first grade. We test them in the fall. We do interventions. We test them again in January. We do additional interventions, and we're looking towards that SBA in the spring, and then we do a fourth or a third one for placement for the following year. So that's been an important component of what we do. So we're kind of looking at it from both arenas. We're held accountable by the SBA data, but yet we know that there's probably not a strong enough correlation between our current SBA standards and national assessments like NAEP, but MAP is aligned with that. So we're using that tool to help raise the bar not only for SBAs, but for that other nationwide norm reference kind of a assessment.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, can I make a comment?
Yes, please do.
I'll just speak for myself, but I believe that there are many in the legislature. All of us appreciate everything that you do at a local level. And how hard that each of you work. I started as a PTA president for 6 years and on the board for 7 at a local PTA. So I've been in the classroom, and I know many of the challenges that you face. But we have a challenge at the state level, too. We have lots of money in our savings account, billions of dollars. But we have a limited revenue stream that's coming into our state right now, and current projections show us about $400 million off of this year's budget, $400 million short in revenue. So if we, right now, and we have another quarter to go, so let me provide some hope or some light at the end. You know, our economy is so tied to the price per barrel of oil and how much is going through the pipeline that we can either come out on the other end and have surplus money where it makes it easier to invest in our hometowns, our schools, and in projects that people across Alaska ask for. But right now we're looking at a $400 million shortfall. And we did save a lot of money, so that number is fungible. It goes downwards as low as $150 million and upwards to $1.6 billion if we're looking at 2 years combined. So we have a challenge, and we need you in it with us. We certainly, Ms. Hull, we certainly understand that digital can close many gaps for our state. And so that's a great request. But again, we have a challenge, and we need you to understand that challenge, or at least I need you. I'll speak for myself. I need you to understand that I have a challenge in voting and having to choose priorities. And inside of Alaska's Constitution, education is number one on that priority list. But how will we do it together and not harm public safety and mental health services, behavioral health, and other other great needs that are in our state. So again, I'll just close from a finance perspective. I just felt like I needed to share that, but please know that I'm going to continue to listen, that I began in the classroom, so I know what you're facing. I've served on the local assembly, so I know somewhat what you face at school boards trying to put things together, and we are here as a partner. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Fairclough. Senator Gardner.
Thank you. I have a much simpler request of you. That is, educators use a lot of acronyms, and can you just repeat the name of the screening test that you use that is tied to national norms?
It's the Northwest Education Association, it's NWEA.
Thank you.
And I apologize for that, those acronyms. Oh, aren't we want to use those, you know, in our organizations? And the MAP piece is the measurement of academic progress.
Thank you, Mr. Superintendent. I've had a chance to talk to Bill today, and I've been in the schools and know the warm feeling that you get when you're in those schools. I know kids feel safe and welcome, and that's great to see in Dillingham. Could you comment on what you might be doing in order to bring kids up to speed by the time they get to third grade testing on reading skills? And how you involve parents, which is a great concern of ours?
We do. 3 years ago, really, the early reading parent group in town did the Dolly Parton and the, and I never get this right, Imagination Library. And they have put so many books out in our community, and it's really been dynamic. And from there, we kind of formed they call it the DELC, another acronym, right? Dillingham Early Literacy Coalition. How about that one? And it's all parents, and it's some different entities. And we got together and talked about we're not being able to meet this need for our early kids. How can we do a better job with that? Well, they were doing a wonderful job with the Dolly Parton and the books and out. We then partnered up with Head Start in our elementary school and started with our parents doing evening and weekend presentations all around reading, making it fun. We then put our heads together and thought, gosh, the state had that pilot program for pre-K, and there was competitive. And we were kind of intimidated by going after that, but we thought, you know what, let's do it. And we were one of the eight communities that were funded for that. And so we took our resources that we had, partnered with all these groups, and placed it out at the Head Start. And they, on a given year, would meet the need of about 40 to 50 kids, and we knew there was another 30, 40 that weren't getting met. We put our three teachers under that grant out there. They had the space, and we now, every kid in Dillingham that we're aware of is able to go there, regardless of income qualifying guidelines, and get that early childhood jump start. And then as we bring them into our school system, we start that assessment and intervention right there with the kindergartens. And we tweak it all year long, and then we do it in the first grade, and then we do it in the second grade. And because of the dedication of our teachers, the support of our board, the finances we've been able to put together from various sources, you're seeing the kind of results that can happen with a focused effort by school districts. And we're not unique in this regard. And, you know, if we can't fund everything in education, I would ask you, let's not couch it in the terminology that we have failed school systems. And we're not producing improvement with our kids, because for me, we are.
Thank you very much, Bill. I appreciate it. Yes, please, Senator.
Thank you. You guys have a very difficult job. And one of the things that myself and others are looking at is we're trying to get feedback from you and from your staff as the customers, the consumer of what we put together at the state level. Folks sitting around the table, some have been here a month, some have been here several years, but the state has put together this system along with the federal government. And so we have put a requirement on you folks to perform and function at a certain level. And I agree with you, we shouldn't be saying the school system is failing and looking at you folks, because we're part of that problem or we're part of that solution. So you've heard today that there may be some issues with money, and some will say not. You know, there's billions of dollars and we can take that now and spend it. And that's true, we could do that. We don't know what's going to happen 10, 15, 25 years from now, and we're looking at that time frame as well. But I guess where I'm going with this is I would ask you and your school boards and your teachers and your principals, to sit down and think of a situation or a world where there's not going to be as much money, but to sit down and think, what are the things that we at the state level compel you to do that cost money? In other words, if we're not going to give you the money in the BSA, which quite frankly, we help develop the system, we either pay for it, and all you folks are doing is trying to do your job to carry out what we've put together, or you tell us what we need to change so it costs less. And so that's what I'm asking. I know there's a few others that are asking that question too. So if there was a, if you had to dwell in a world where there wasn't as much money, what are some laws and what are some regulations that you have to operate under that you're compelled to do things that make you spend money or make it cost more? And so I'm asking everyone sitting here, don't take for granted the construct that you currently operate under, because that construct is just that. It's a construct. We constructed it. So when you go back home and you talk with your board and you talk to your staff, think through some of the things that we can change here at this level. We seem to pile on reg after reg, law after law, reg after reg, law after law. The federal government is in competition with us doing the same thing. And the result is we have a system and a profession, a teaching profession, which has become one of the most regulated professions there is. I'm amazed that people still want to go into teaching. And I'm amazed that folks want to run for school board and be superintendents. So we made this issue. We want to help you change things. So that's what I would ask you. Think about the things that you can come to us and say, hey, if you change AS-14 whatever, or if you change this code, or if you change this reg, it'll allow us more flexibility and the ability to do this, and will cost less money. If you do that, I know in my case, and I think others, you're going to get a real willing ear to help you. So I'll do all I can.
Thank you. Is Representative Wilson here? I saw her come in. Representative Tammy Wilson, coming up. And okay, thank you. There's some chairs up here if you'd care to join us. Anybody else I've missed? Okay, thank you, Representative Wilson. I'd like to give an opportunity to other people to speak. We don't have too much time, but Senator Gardner.
I assume that there's somebody from the Department of Education listening to this, and I know that last night in preparation for this meeting, I went back through the materials that the Anchorage School District has provided, and one of their legislative priorities is they've a request to the Department of Education to go through all the regulations and, you know, give them a synopsis, and so I hope that that work is well underway, because it's the same vein that Senator Dunleavy was speaking of.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, Senators. My name is Lon Garrison. I'm with the Sitka School Board and also a member of the Executive Committee with the Association of Alaska School Boards. And first off, I wanted to reiterate what Bill from Dillingham had said, is that we are very much appreciative of the support that the Alaska Legislature has given us over the years in regards to education funding. We couldn't be where we're at today with the improvement that we do see without that support. And there's absolutely no question that we would be in a much graver circumstance than we are. And yet, we continue to have increasing demands on the few resources that we get. And we get it as well as anybody that those resources are dwindling. And there's greater clamor for those few resources that we get. And looking on into the future, how can we do these things more cost effectively, better, and get better results? And I think your point, Senator Dunleavy, about us coming back to you with concrete ideas about what can we change in terms of regulations, in terms of how we do things, is right on. One of the things when the AASB board met this last summer in Sitka and took a look at our long-range plan, what do we do? Where are we going? Where can we be innovative? We said we can't be the association, we can't be school boards that say no. There's some pretty radical ideas out there for some of us to, you know, there's some very different, you know, differences of opinion and philosophy, but we can't sit here and say no, and we're not going to do that. We have to face the problem head on. We have to be innovative. We have to be willing to listen to those who have some different ideas and find some common ground and make it happen. And I guess one of the things that I want to portray to you is that's what we're going to do. And that's our intention. We know how critically important it is for us to educate each and every child in this state. And that's our charge. By the Constitution, that is our charge. And we've been elected as public officials, as you have, to carry that out on your behalf for the rest of the state. So I just wanted to make sure that you understood we are exceptionally serious about this. This is not something that for most of us, it seems, and many of you have been involved either as a school board or a PTA member, you know how much time it takes. And I think a lot of people don't understand how much time it takes. I don't even want to count up the hours that I spend on this issue because I'm passionate about it, for one, because I think it's the most important thing we can do, and it's an investment in this state's future. There's no doubt about it. So when we talk about innovative ideas, such as the Digital Learning Initiative, that's one approach. And that's not a huge high-cost approach. It's not the perfect approach. It's not going to solve everybody's problems. And you're going to hear from districts across the state, you know, that yes, we're ready for that. No, we're not quite ready for that. We have some serious concerns about our access to bandwidth. How is that going to work? Those are all valid concerns and criticisms, but we face the opportunity to take a bold step forward and to do something very few people have done. And as Sue said, make a transformation. And that's just one step. And I know in other areas of the state, some of those steps may involve charter schools, may involve more alternative schools, different ways to solve the same problem. So I just wanted to make sure you understood from us, from me as a school board member and me as a member of the Association of Alaska School Boards, we're working on it. We want to change. We want to see those statistics continue to grow in the right direction. And we also ask for some patience in letting us make sure that happens. We face a huge uphill, we face a steep hill to climb as we adopt these new state standards, as we bring our staffs into alignment with those standards and try to provide the professional development that it's going to take for them to understand those standards and implement them through the district. That is not going to be easy. And one of the big concerns many of us have is not with the standards themselves, but the implementation of the timing of that, because it's a huge fundamental shift in how much we have to get done. And we're saying we absolutely have to do it. I know in my district in Sitka that we're looking forward to the change. What we're not looking forward to is making sure that, you know, that we don't screw up and mess it up, that we don't hit the mark when we have to hit the mark. Our philosophy has always been we only have one opportunity to educate each child. And when it comes to dollars, when it comes to programs, when it comes to any of those things, we make a decision every single year in favor of what is the most that we can do. So I just leave you with those few thoughts and let you know we are going to work at it. We're willing to listen and willing to try to find common ground and make sure we come up with solutions that are good both for us and for the state.
Thank you very much, Lon. I do want to say that many legislators have served on school boards, have taught, have certainly had children in school, and have a real understanding through PTAs and school boards of education. So I think you'll find there's a real affinity between us and you in that. And I think also we've learned that there's no magic bullet, that there's a lot of ways to do this, and we can't just concentrate on one thing, can't just concentrate on digital learning, have to concentrate on all elements that make a good school. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good to have someone from Sitka with us. I just wanted to either validate or dispel a rumor. Senator Stedman continuously tells us that he was the valedictorian of his high school class. I just want to see if that was in fact the case or not.
Oh, it absolutely was.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. And a retort, Senator Stedman.
On that, before I get into the more serious matter, that unfortunately, I wasn't the valedictorian, I was the class clown. I had a cousin that was in the other category. He studied enough for both of us. But anyway, on a more serious note, one of the concerns I have is as we flat funded the BSA for 3 years and most likely going to be 4 years reading the tea leaves, and when that funding outside the formula, gets squeezed because of budgetary impacts, that the schools around the state don't end up with some mini cliff that they've run into. It's very difficult, if not impossible, to move the BSA number down. It's extremely easy to take out the energy money or other mechanisms that we may use outside the formula. So some of us do support an increase in one of them of the BSA. At some point, when you flat fund something for so long, you end up creating other problems. But I would encourage, and I am interested to hear the results from the interest that Anchorage had in trying to streamline the process on cost savings and see what we can get out of that arena.
Yeah.
But it does, if you go 4 years, 5 years, 6 years of flat funding, we all know what that's going to end up happening. Several years later, we're going to end up with a big spike. And it's going to be kind of painful for both the legislature and the school boards to work through.
Well, we've all seen the effect of that over the years with other things. In Sitka, we have, harbors. And they hadn't charged, they hadn't increased harbor rates. And then all of a sudden, we've got to do all this work and make things better. And now we have to increase rates. Nobody thought about that. We know that costs continue to increase. One of the other things that I'd like to mention about costs is, as you all well know, federal resources are dwindling about as fast as anything else that we can look at. And one of the things that that is looming certainly on our horizon is the massive reduction in federal funding with sequestration. Whether you're talking about impact aid, Title I, those IDEA, and for forested school districts, forested communities that have traditionally relied on the Secure Rural Schools funding, it's a huge impact. In Southeast Alaska, it's a huge issue. And right now, I serve on the National Forest Counties and Schools Coalition Board of Directors, and there's nothing in the pipeline yet for a potential reauthorization of that funding. And for many communities, that could often be 25% of their school budget. That was directly related to resource development and a pact with that pact goes back well over 100 years with the American public on resources off of public lands and supporting communities with that money. And Congress has not kept up their end of the bargain. So those are the pressures that we face outside of state funding that continue to put the squeeze on it, and that exacerbates everything that we see. So, yes, every year, the less money that we have to work with, the more difficult it becomes. We certainly understand the sentiment. We want to see results. Nobody wants to see results more than we do, because we're there in the trenches and we're intimately involved with it, and we too are parents. So we want to see our kids do well. But thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Lon. We were really impressed when we learned that there's a school in your district named Stedman, only to learn it was named for another Stedman and not our senator, a relative, I understand. So anyway, still very impressive. Thank you. Anyone else care to speak to us at this time? Yes, sir. Come forward. And you were introduced on the floor as a member of the school board, is that true?
Yes, sir. Yes, my name is...
Along with the member from, the school board president from Dillingham, I thought you were both students, but we're really pleased to see you here, and congratulations for taking the interest in being involved.
Well, my name is Royal Henderson. I'm 18 years old, and I am a student at Haynes High School, but I am also a school board member. And I just had a few things to say on the subject of education as it relates to the legislature, just in general. I'm from the Haynesboro School District, and in the Haynesboro School District, our mission statement is to graduate lifelong learners with the confidence, skills, and knowledge to realize their aspirations and contribute to a changing world. And so in order to achieve that goal, our board president actually has a nice way of putting it. She says to prepare Alaskan students for Alaskan jobs. And for a lot of students, and I can speak for this because I have many, many classmates who depend on these things, that translates to programs like voc ed programs and dual credit. You know, we're offering an engineering class right now in Haynes High School. And voc ed is incredibly important, especially for those students that aren't necessarily college-bound for four-year degrees, that are more interested in technical school or something of that aspect. And unfortunately, for districts that are under financial pressure, especially those who have already started cutting things like voc ed and art and music and those sort of outside the core curriculum programs are the first to go. And that just makes any of us that are on a school board very sad, because those are all very useful programs. And so all of us understand the fact that there's dwindling money in the state and the fact that, oh, thank you. If we'd like to, take a look at some of the statistics there about the Haynesboro School District. I was going to say that coming up to the fact that there's dwindling money in the state and that there's less money to go around, all of us understand that there are lots of things to fund in the state of Alaska. But that comes down to a question of priorities, and that's been discussed a little bit. And I'd just like to say things, when it comes to priorities, things like public safety, mental health, and domestic violence, the governor's initiative on reducing domestic violence in the state, all of those things, increased education and increased quality of education has a positive impact on every single one of those priorities. So I understand that each and every one of you have your own priorities when it comes to the limited money in the state. But I say education cannot be ignored, and education will have a positive impact on nearly every single one of your other priorities that when it comes to funding the state of Alaska. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I did meet with the commissioner of education shortly after the governor's speech, and wanted to talk to him about the how we're going to raise those graduation rates. And one of the plans I know he's instigating is junior and seniors in high school, helping them do internship programs where they work in the community, work on a job, and are actually led and helped become employees that might be hired in those positions. So his belief is that'll increase graduation rates, I think, by 2.5%. So that's part of his plan. Yes, sir. Senator Bishop.
Royal?
Yes.
What do you want to do when you graduate high school?
When I graduate high school, I'm going to go off to college. I have not yet decided where that's going to be, but I have decided that post-secondary school is for me. And I guess right now, for me, I'll most likely go into study political science or something to that effect. But I'd have to say that I know a lot of people in my class who have very different paths than me, and their career paths depend on things like vocational education and career tech and engineering and things like that.
You did a good job representing your school district.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Russ. Thank you. Other comments? Anyone else care to speak to us tell us what you're doing or what your concerns are or what the roadblocks in the way might be. Short of that, any senators have any thoughts or comments they care to share at this time? Yes, sir, we have a couple. Please come forward.
Good afternoon, Senators. Peter Hefner, I'm from Cordova. I'm on the school board there. Some of our issues are it boils down to funding. We are a good school district there. We have achieved, this last particular year, we had an 88% graduation rate. We are doing well. We have a culture of excellence there in Cordova. We have passed AYP for the last 12 years. We're one of the 12 districts that have consistently passed AYP. We are doing all the right things. We've been fortunate to institute the CDL program in Cordova at the beginning of the process in 2006.
And define that for us.
Oh, I'm sorry, Peter. Excuse me. Yeah, it's a consortium for digital learning.
Thank you.
It was a small portion of money. I'm going to say 33% of the costs were forwarded to us initially for the first year of implementation. We now have iPads clear back to the first grade. The students are learning off of those. They're using them as a tool. It's a wonderful program, and that's with the digital initiative that governor has proposed that will help us in more implementation. But unfortunately, you mentioned the BSA earlier. Yeah, over the last 4 years, we're cutting back on everything. Unfortunately, Cordova doesn't have nurses and assistant superintendent or principals or superintendents or reading specialists that can be cut. And so our cuts are cutting to the bone. We are cutting teachers. It's a concern on our school board that the governor has the performance scholarship. One of our concerns is, as the rigor increases on that, how can we help our students achieve that? Last year, 33% of our students were eligible for that performance scholarship. Last year, 25% of our graduating class was eligible too. We're very concerned, though, that we won't be able to offer the courses in the coming years as we have to reduce staff, because our reductions are at the staff level at this point in time. So with 4 years of flat funding, with the increases that we see, we're striving our hardest. We've instituted a waste oil boiler there in town. We're actually saving money on our energy program, or on energy costs. Our kids ran an energy audit in our high school, and through just their participation, we've been able to cut costs, shutting down water or extra hot water boilers or water makers. Gosh, what's the term for it? Excuse me. But through these things, we've been able to, and the kids don't have to take cold showers, though, either, so. But through these things, we've been able to save some of our programs. But it's as the funding has been level, we're making more and more cuts. So I appreciate your listening today, and we want to keep our kids educated. We want to ready them for the 21st century. We wanted to see them be productive students. And as Royal mentioned, yeah, it all boils down to if you get your kids educated, a lot of the problems that you see later on in life, societal issues, will be diminished. So, and we try to keep every single kid in school, trying to do everything we can to engage the students.
Thank you, Peter. When I was last in your school, you had the Teacher of the Year and the Principal of the Year from the Cordova School, and I was really impressed to see iPads in every child's hand. That was really quite impressive. Thank you. Senator Gardner.
Thank you very much, and I've been following some of the results that your school district has had, and it is indeed very impressive, particularly when you understand that some of your communities are communities that have been economically hard hit and would not be expected to be doing as well academically. Can you speak to that a little bit?
It's interesting. We've tried to figure out, why our kids do so well, and we've, I don't know, one of the things we have parents that care. Our parents are involved. It's kind of humorous, well, not humorous, but one level, you know, it's like we have to do a lot of travel for our sports and stuff. So the kids, my daughter's on the volleyball team, 11 members on the team. We had to raise $30,000 for the 11 volleyball members just to travel around to these organizations. So it's, you know, when you got the community support, we are a unique little community. We care about each other. We care about our students. And it's in that expectation of greatness. We constantly tell our kids that, you know, and it's that constant message. That's one of the things I feel is a great thing that we do there.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Peter. And we have comments in the middle room. Please come forward.
Thank you, Mr. President, and I'm very fortunate to have one-on-one interaction with you guys instead of going on computer and not seeing the reaction of the body. So I just have success stories.
And your name for the record, please.
Oh, sorry about that. I'm John Etchick from Chivac. I represent Kashinimi School District. We're a single site, and my colleagues are back over there. I just only want to share a couple of success stories, and I won't take much of your time since your time is important. First off, the one that's not on the list is we have a K through third full immersion program in our language. Last year we did a survey of the young parents in our community, and 100% of them wanted their kids to be in the full language immersion of our language, which we are losing through the television, mainly English shows that are on the TV. So all the surveys came back 100% wanting their child to go into a full language immersion. And a few of them were left out because they had no room, and we had to make room for them in another classroom for just all English class. So we have a big support from our community to revitalize our language, which we are losing readily, and we're really happy and supportive of that. And on another note, since we have teacher turnovers, that, you know, we hire teachers from outside of our village and let them, we house them and we make the village their second home. But 1 or 2 years or 3 years later, they move on to another area. So in light of that problem, we got together and we partnered with University of Alaska Anchorage, and we called it a teacher's cohort. I don't know if there's a better name to that, but we took the teacher aides from the existing classrooms that we're serving, and now they're having night classes through internet, and we have two professors that are working closely with us, so we're gonna be increasing our retention rate on our teachers, and hopefully we'll solve the teacher housing problem too with that. So with that, you guys can look through our brochures, and we'll be here till tomorrow. Thank you.
Well, thank you, John. Before you go, we work closely with the University of Alaska on trying to help them graduate more teachers who are from Alaska, who are born in Alaska. And one of the problems I always saw is that we had these great aides in our smaller communities, teachers' aides, who simply could not leave for long periods of time in order to get a teaching certificate. So this is a way to do it, and it seems to be working fairly well, bringing the teachers' aides into an educational system, and they would wind up with a teaching certificate then?
Yeah. Yes. One more thing aside from this. We're gathering and hosting a big gathering in our community in Chivac. There's over 19 villages coming to gather and celebrate our past success and gatherings subsistence-wise, so, and if you would like to come over, we'll have a get-together March 1, 2, and 3. So if you guys are available, you guys are most welcome to come over.
Thank you very much, John. I appreciate it. Any comments or questions? All right, thank you. Any further statements or concerns? Yes, ma'am. Please come forward. And your name for the record, please.
My name's Roseanne Dimmer, and I'm Quahog City School District.
Thank you, Roseanne.
I would like to get a clearer understanding what your definition of is of a dropout rate. Because whenever you talk about a dropout rate, we all seem to be talking off a different sheet. And it should be pretty much plain English, but it's not. And a couple years ago, ASB did a diagram of dropout rates. I mean, Quahog, we're really lucky. We have 100% graduation rate. Over the years, I think we've got to 2% dropout. So we have a very successful school. But the problem we have is with the flat funding, the standards, which everybody agrees with, but you're talking about professional development. Where is that money going to come from? Well, it all gets taken away from the kids. Because we have to provide the quality teachers. The teachers need the education in order to teach to the standards. Where's the time going to come from? You're going to take it away from the kids so the teachers get the professional development. There's going to be a time where the kids, it's going to dip down because the kids aren't getting what they need, and then it'll start to rise again to the standards. But you have to give us time to get to that place. I mean, I love the energy that we get that little bit. It helps. But we have a very conservative superintendent. We've been budgeting on cuts for a long time. And we were still $50-some thousand off on energy. And he has got an extremely sharp pencil. We've already paired up 1 and 2, 3 and 4 combined classrooms. We've done all that. Now with the federal cuts and what's going to happen there and the flat funding here and then the standards, I don't know how much more we're going to lose. And we're doing it on the backs of our children. And that's what really, really bothers me, is that we're just doing it on the backs of our kids. You know, currently I have 3 grandchildren under the age of 3. And through some of the things I've learned through ASB and going through some of our conferences, we have a basket of books, and my kids, my grandbabies, that's where they go first, instead of toys, which is really a neat thing. But it's by reaching out to them, what kind of school are they going to have to go into? Are we going to be able to provide the education they need? You know, my oldest daughter went through Quahog City School District. She's got 2 master's degrees. She's came back, she's teaching in Quahog. Is she gonna even have a job? I mean, it's not because, it's flat out the money. I understand the state's tight. I understand that we have issues in the state. But we need to identify where we can cut and what we can do. Last year when we looked at the budget, I think there was $20 million for prison and running a prison. Well, maybe if we improved our education and did more outreach, we wouldn't have to spend that kind of money on a prison. Maybe if we learned how to talk about the issues that are facing everyone. We were part of the CDL, the Consortium for Digital Learning, the first year. And the first time I walked in the school and the kids were in there, the library, and it was quiet. Well, libraries are usually quiet. But here, these kids were all huddled together with their laptops and doing all these programs. And then the kids in, let's see, what grade was she? First grade. They did a Cool Cats Cafe. And they did digital stories and books with their little things. And they did out a performance for the community. Now, in rural communities, the school is everything. I mean, it is absolutely everything. We have a Native Arts Night, and all the kids' artwork throughout the year is put out. It's one of the most popularly attended thing in the whole school. This is like Cool Cat Cafe. You see these little kids in the books that they've made up with the digital learning. It's amazing what they can do. I mean, most of us have iPhones or some kind of thing like that. I have to hand mine to my kids because I really don't. I'm not very good at it. But, you know, I just would like to see us recognize that this is coming on the backs of our kids. We need to do whatever we can to make it better for them. Because with all the cuts that are coming on the federal and state level, we're going to start losing teachers, and we're going to lose our highly qualified teachers. So our children are going to pay the price. And I just, that's all I wanted to say. So thank you.
Thank you, Roseanne. I sense your frustration. I understand it. The issue of flat funding, certainly when you take into account inflation, winds up with less funding. And I understand that, you know, the governor's position on going from a 30% dropout to 10% dropout, becoming sort of the leaders in digital learning, you're being asked to do more with less money. I certainly understand that. And as for your question about really figuring out what dropout means, we need to identify that. We will depend on the department.
And I need to be on the same sheet of music. Mm-hmm. I mean, if this is dropout rate to you, it needs to mean the same thing to me.
I couldn't agree more. Yes. Comments, anybody around the table? Well, thank you all very much. I mean, I appreciate everyone being here. I know everyone has a schedule to keep, but I think it's valuable to do this once a year just to have a chance to sit down and hear questions and try to answer them. Thank you all very much, and we're adjourned.